For the Uniting Church in Australia, it's best of times, worst of times. Walk into many Uniting Churches, especially in Sydney and Brisbane and Melbourne, and the congregations will be swaying and clapping and singing their hearts out, not always in English. The church that was founded 35 years ago as a union of Methodists, Presbyterians and Congregationalists has found a new constituency in Pacific Islanders and Korean and Chinese communities. But the latest census figures say the Uniting Church now represents only about 5% of Australian Christians. The church is also balancing some sharp differences in theology. On the ever-present issue of sexuality, for example, the Liberals want more acceptance of same-sex unions and gay and lesbian clergy. The Conservatives have their own group. It's called the Assembly of Confessing Congregations. They support traditional marriage. So far, the show is holding together. There's no threat of imminent schism. Church members have gathered in Adelaide this week for the 13th Triennial Assembly to deal with fresh challenges. The Uniting Church's new president is theologian and bioethicist, the Reverend Professor Andrew Dutney.
I think the biggest challenge is our biggest opportunity, and that is how we can grow together as an extremely diverse church with people of many languages and cultures and religious backgrounds in one community. It's a great challenge, but what an opportunity.
Now, you talk about people of different cultural backgrounds, ethnicities. What about people of different theologies, though, Andrew?
The different theologies don't need to be banging their heads against each other all the time. And one of the things that we're learning, particularly through our relationships with partner churches in Asia and the Pacific and Africa, and with migrant ethnic communities here in Australia, is that when you start talking about people's lived experience of being Christian and forming Christian community, there's a lot more in common than some of the niceties of theological disagreement that once drove us out into denominations. But you know, I think there's a sense in which we are genuinely moving into a post-denominational time.
But are there competing theologies in the Uniting Church?
There are. There's no question about that.
Well, what are those competing theologies? I mean, aside from the competition among the founding theologies, Calvinism versus a sort of Arminian Methodism, what are those competing theologies?
There are some theologies which are more conservative in their form. So they might be conservative evangelical or more conservative reformed. And they compete with, say, theologies that are more about the enculturation of theology into either Western contemporary culture or into one of the Pacific or Asian cultures. We have our fair share of progressive Christians who are exploring frontiers that are sort of beyond where the church has gone in the past. But somehow what we are seeking to do is to hold together a vision that's bigger than these lesser divisions between us. And that vision is really about where we believe God is taking the world as that's revealed in Scripture, in the tradition. And we are very committed to the idea that God is leading all things towards reconciliation and renewal. And that means that we face our differences and seek to find ways to be reconciled to one another.
In your installation address on Sunday evening, you spoke about a messiness, the disorderly creation that is part and parcel of the Uniting Church's life and ministry. Isn't this just a creative way, though, of papering over some rather deep divisions in the Uniting Church over doctrine?
I don't believe so, no. I think it's actually a reflection of the biblical experience of being church. If we read the New Testament, one of the main issues that's canvassed in virtually every part of the New Testament is how can these people be together? Jews, Greeks, male, female, slaves, free, rich people, poor people, how can they all gather around one table to celebrate the death and resurrection of Christ? So all of the New Testament writers are investing tremendous amounts of energy into guiding these messy communities that have been created into ways of living together more effectively. I think what we're experiencing in the Uniting Church is that in the 21st century.
There's no question that you can have enormous diversity among the flock, but you have two flocks in the Uniting Church and have had for about 6 years now a group in the Uniting Church called the Assembly of Confessing Congregations. And that is a group of if not conservative, then they would call themselves more biblically orthodox members of the Uniting Church. And they do have deep doctrinal differences with you over the question of sexuality.
The Assembly of Confessing Churches is very loosely related to the Uniting Church, and I wouldn't see them as really representing a significant part of the Uniting Church's identity. We certainly have disagreement within the church over issues associated with sexuality. And we recognise that, and we're not walking away from that. But it's not a cause for us to say, well, that's it, it's over, we're parting our ways. Because more fundamentally than those differences, we have a common call from Christ to be together and to be in mission together. So we're not going to let our difference of opinion in that area undermine the other ways in which we are very creatively engaged together with reconciliation. So in local congregations, people, in spite of differences, are still having experiences of community, experiences of their life being transformed and re-energized. And that's what they want to be on about. Local congregations are still engaging with their neighbours and surrounding communities in positive ways. And our agencies, of course, are still contributing a tremendous amount to health, welfare and education throughout the Australian community. These things are not to be sacrificed because we're not at a point where we can agree on this other matter.
The Assembly of Confessing Congregations, when it was started, in its founding statement said it was born at a point of crisis of faith. This is their words, crisis of faith in the life of the Uniting Church. Now, that's less than 6 years ago. Have you reconciled? Have you passed that point of crisis?
I dispute to begin with that that crisis is in fact real. The Assembly of Confessing Congregations effectively stands to one side of the Uniting Church on this matter. I have no role with them. They have no immediate role with me or with the Uniting Church as a whole. So they represent a movement that's associated with the Uniting Church. They have members from other denominations and members who are formerly part of the Uniting Church but who have left. But certainly they don't provide a lens through which to understand the heart of what the Uniting Church is going through at the moment or of its vision.
Your predecessor, the Reverend Alastair McRae, when we spoke to him earlier this year on the program, I suggested to him that this was a workable model within the Uniting Church to have a church within a church. I said, you seem to have reached a happy compromise. He said, well, I don't think so. At the moment, it's basically a halfway house. It can't continue because this group within the Uniting Church isn't totally happy with our more liberal positions on sexuality. So is it sustainable?
I believe it is, yes.
You don't sense that at some point there'll be a formal schism?
I don't believe so, no.
Will the church at this assembly resolve its position on same-sex marriage?
There's no proposal for the assembly to do that, so the answer to that would be no. None of the proposals involve changing the current definition of marriage in the church, and so at the end of the assembly we'll be in the same position that we were at the start of the assembly, and that is that we understand that marriage is the lifelong union of a man and a woman.
Harry Herbert, a leading member of the Uniting Church, said on the program a few weeks ago, I asked him, you're a leading liberal, given that the growth in the Uniting Church, and there is growth, as you know, especially in Pacific Islander and Asian communities, was likely to occur among people who had a more biblically orthodox or conservative position, what would happen to the liberals? And he said, well, I think people like me will recede in importance. What do you think of that prediction?
Well, I think there's no question that the liberalism with which the Uniting Church and its predecessors were associated in the past is very much in decline. It's not being replaced by a fundamentalism or anything like that. It's as the world has moved on and as horizons have been broadened by the contact that different kinds of Christians are having with each other, people who formerly might have been liberal are discovering that there are other ways of reading the Bible that aren't liberal, where you don't try to explain away all the difficult stuff, but you can sit with some of the paradoxes and read the Bible more directly into your own life and your own situation. So the categories of liberal, conservative, they just don't work quite so well anymore. New categories haven't emerged yet. That's probably a positive thing. In the meantime, we can be people together reading the scriptures faithfully, drawing on whatever resources we can muster from our different traditions.
The new president of the Uniting Church, the Reverend Professor Andrew Dewdney. This is the Religion and Ethics Report with me, Andrew West.